Good morning, Mr. Antrim.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is George Antrim, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Mandy Lyles. There are three claims here, one for discrimination, one for harassment, and one for retaliation or reprisal, as we call it in Minnesota. And the facts overlap with respect to all three of those causes of action. But basically, what we're talking about is, do the facts and the inferences from those facts that were presented to the district court resolved in favor of my client Mandy Lyles present jury issues? And I most certainly think, Your Honor, that they do. I think that in this particular case, it's evident that the court was making credibility determinations, was resolving disputed facts in favor of McCrossin, and I think this decision needs to be overturned and returned to the district court so that we can have that jury trial. Mandy Lyles was employed by McCrossin, or CSM, for over 7 years. She was successful in obtaining employment after she was terminated, and she's kept that employment until today. The first 5 years, she enjoyed a great relationship with CSM. She got good reviews. She had coffee with the underground leader at McCrossin, Tom Peterson Sr., and she was working on a regular mentoring kind of basis with the president of the company himself, Tom McCrossin. However, all of that changed in December of 2009 when the son of the underground manager, Tom Peterson Jr., attacked Mandy Lyles in the field, raving in front of other employees, and then he followed it up with an email, which the court has been presented with in the record, which is laced with sexist comments. And it's because she rejected his advances. After that incident in December of 2009, everything changed for Mandy Lyles. No more coffee with Tom Peterson Sr. She maintained a mentoring relationship with Tom McCrossin, but even that absolutely came to an end about the time of the corrective action plan. The cap that was put in place that I'll be discussing. However, her performance reviews continued to be good. It's evident from the record that Tom Peterson Sr. held his grudges for a long time, and he held his grudge against Mandy Lyles throughout the last 2 years of her employment, which were really hellish for her. The following year, in 2010, a woman employee named Deb Petrie complained about being discriminated against by CSM because she was a woman. She was not being allowed to get the training she needed in a lattice boom crane. My client went to bat for her all the way up to Tom McCrossin and said, she needs to get trained, oiled. There's evidence in the record that a couple of the McCrossin employees said, I'll never train a woman, I'll never oil for a woman. But my client was successful with Tom McCrossin only in getting her in that crane for 1 day. And that 1 day was accompanied by ridicule from other employees at CSM about the fact that Mandy Lyles should go take photographs of her and of Deb Petrie in the crane, her girlfriend. The district court, for example, found that Deb Petrie got what she needed. She got her 1 day. She got the training that she needed for the crane. That's not true, Your Honor. She did not. At worst, that is a disputed fact that the trial court found in favor of McCrossin. Later in 2010, she was assigned to the light rail project, and she was supervised by an Ames employee named Justin Gabrielson. Justin Gabrielson, upon meeting my client, said, I've never worked with a woman assistant project manager before. Are you going to cry on me? That was just the beginning of a long road of sexist and harassing treatment, which is outlined in the brief, on the part of Justin Gabrielson toward my client. So now she's got two people who are not very happy with her, Tom Peterson Sr. and Justin Gabrielson. When Justin Gabrielson got the job, he went and talked to Tom Peterson Jr. because the underground manager provides all the equipment to people and is an important part of the deal. And what Justin Gabrielson heard from Tom Peterson Sr. was, put the screws to her. This was one of many comments from which a jury could reasonably infer that my client was not fired because of her performance, but was fired because she made a sexual harassment complaint against Junior. She made sexual harassment complaints, multiple sexual harassment complaints against Justin Gabrielson. And she apparently, the other thing that Tom Peterson Sr. did, Your Honor, is he refused to provide her equipment that she needed to do her job.
What's the time frame between those complaints and the actual termination of her employment?
The first complaint in December of 2009, her termination is in January of 2012. So it's a little over 2 years of what I consider pretty constant evidence of discrimination, discrimination because of gender, sexual harassment. And the whole idea of that cap, I'll get to in a minute.
That's a pretty substantial amount of time between the complaint of acts and the retaliation, isn't it?
Well, the first one is 2 years. The second one happened in 2010 with Petrie. The third one started in the end of 2010 and continued through 2011. So it's continuous, Your Honor. It's not, these aren't isolated stray incidents that we're talking
about. I was talking about the retaliation. The retaliation has to be based on some complaint, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so the time frame between any complaint and the termination is at least 2 years, right?
Only with respect to Tom Peterson Jr. The time frame with respect to Deb Petrie is down to about a year. The complaint with respect to Justin Gabrielson for sexual harassment occurred in 2011. So it's much less than a year in connection with those complaints. So it's our position, Your Honor, that she was retaliated against not for only the 2009 incident, but for her complaining about Justin Gabrielson, particularly in 2011. The other person that is crucial, and the cases recognize, I think, the interrelationship of the players here, which is why I'm going at this the way I am, is Manny Walk. When Manny Walk, Justin Gabrielson was her direct supervisor, even though he was from a different company, for 4 or 5 months in 2010 and 2011. Then Manny Walk came on the scene in the spring or summer of 2011, which is, of course, just less than a year from her termination. But when Manny Walk joined Gabrielson in 2011, they talked about whether they could make it so bad for Lyles at CSM that she would quit or whether CSM would have to fire her. At the same time, Lyles overheard Manny Walk tell Anderson, Craig Anderson, who is the right-hand man of Tom Peterson Sr., she overheard Manny Walk tell Anderson and another employee that Walk was going to put her in her effing place. And this, again, was 6 months or less from the time that she was terminated.
Was there any particular event or events that occurred just before her termination?
Thank you, Your Honor. I think the most crucial thing for the court to focus on in that respect is this whole cap idea. Because first, it's our position that CSM had no business putting her on a cap. Because in July of 2011, she got a good performance review. In August of 2011, Manny Walk asked the Human Resources Department for a template for this cap. So he knew there were, you know, was going to be something happening later down the road with respect to this cap. The cap actually wasn't presented to Mandy Lyles until November of 2011. And this is only 2 months before she was terminated. The cap itself is pretty outrageous. We have Manny Walk on tape telling Mandy Lyles that the first task contained in this cap of three tasks would have taken four people full time 2 weeks to complete, and yet he expected her to get it completed with all the other tasks.
Was there anything untoward that happened for when Mr. Gabrielson took her off of the assistant manager's position and put her in the field? What was the gravamen of that?
Your Honor, I thank you for the question. I'm going to admit that it baffles me yet, because CSM across and went to great lengths to say that wasn't a demotion, it wasn't a performance issue, it was to get her an opportunity in the field, and she was all for it. So how that plays in, why they are saying that, because now, of course, you'll probably hear very soon that her performance was deteriorating awfully, and that's why she was moved into the field position. But that's completely inconsistent with their position that this was not a demotion. And, of course, that works nicely. My goodness, do I have 3 minutes left?
You do.
A little less.
Let me... Thank you, Your Honor. Let me get to just a couple very quick things. There's more evidence from which an inference can be drawn, other than the fact that she completed all the tasks in the cap. Her performance was never slighted in writing by anyone until the November cap was given to her. And Craig Anderson is a crucial witness. The judge dismissed him because he and Mandy Lyles were going out at that point in time. Just said nothing he says is credible. But he was the number two man in the underground department, and he said the cap was unreasonable. He says they didn't mean to coach her. It was blatant abuse. So is it a question of fact for the jury that indeed my client was terminated because of her defense of women, because her two specific complaints of sexual harassment against two different individuals that came to be very important in her life when she got fired, or not? Thank you, Your Honor.
Very well.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel, I'm Penelope Phillips here on behalf of Defendant Siesta Crossan. I'm here today to respectfully ask the court to affirm Judge Magnuson's decision granting summary judgment in this matter. Before I discuss the court's decision, I'd like to just briefly address some of the facts that came up in appellant's argument, because I think they're key to the underlying decision, Judge Magnuson's decision.
I hope you'll discuss at some point how when Ms. Lyles was taken off of the light rail program and assigned to the field, and Mr. Walk as her supervisor, he does, I think as was accurately portrayed, give her a mid-year review in which she was, quote, meeting performance expectations, and then shortly thereafter she is put in this corrective action plan that seemed to have led almost immediately then to her termination. That seems like a strange arrangement, frankly.
Your Honor, I can understand why that would be a question that you would have. What I'd like to do, I'll just immediately answer that question because obviously it's important. I think what occurred with respect to Ms. Lyles and going from the inside work to the outside work needs to be contextualized somewhat. Ms. Lyles requested to go work on a project. She was assigned to the light rail project approximately November 2010. Manny Walk was not on the project at that time. Ames was leading the beginnings of the light rail project. She was assigned to inside work through the spring of 2011. What occurred as Tom McCrossin was mentoring her, he had lunch with Ms. Lyles. This is all on the record. Let me just add appendix page 457. Justin Gabrielson had complaints about her performance. Manny Walk learned about some of those complaints. But most significantly, the person that was mentoring her said to Mr. Walk, she's overwhelmed. She's not doing a good job. I took her out to lunch. She was nearly in tears. And as a result of the plaintiff's express, at least according to Tom McCrossin, belief that she was having a hard time, they agreed to put her in the outside of the same project. Didn't move from the trailer. It was all in the same place. And she continued to work on the light rail project, but just doing the outside construction-related tasks as opposed to the office construction-related tasks.
That's the field. Is that what you're...
Exactly. The field versus the office. So there was the change which occurred as a result of the conclusion that she wasn't successful in the inside office part of the light rail work that she was doing. And so then, and I think significantly, to answer your next question, Manny Walk then comes from a job, multi-million dollar job in southern Minnesota, comes up, starts actually working on the light rail project. She's just moved within a few months from the inside work to the field. His assessment of her performance, and her performance has been assessed exactly the same way the entire time she's been there, is not fabulous, great, it's satisfactory. And he specifically notes, and this is in the record as well, Your Honor, in the mid-year evaluation, it's too early to make an assessment of your performance in the new position. And again, forgive me, I'm paraphrasing, I don't have it memorized. In any event, so it is from that point that then the record reflects, and this is all in the record, Your Honor, that Manny Walk says, my goodness, Ms. Lyles can't do some of the fundamental tasks that we would expect an assistant project manager to be able to do.
So he changed his mind. It was adequate performance, and then suddenly something else?
No, I think, Your Honor, that his performance that he had observed of her at the time of the July 2011 summary, and again, keep in mind, I think it's two pages and it doesn't really address anything, was simply that she was on track, but he noted in there, I can't judge your performance goal because you haven't been doing it long enough. Yes, yeah, so again, I hope that's clear, Your Honor. Yes, thank you. Those were that was in fact the main point that I just wanted to get at in terms of the record. The record, there's an extensive record that was available to Judge Magnuson. Judge Magnuson reviewed, had available, of course, to the court the entire record, and reviewing that concluded, one, that the plaintiff did not come forward with any evidence that could persuade a reasonable juror that gender was a motivating factor in her termination, that there wasn't a basis to a sexual harassment claim, and that the retaliation claim, assuming protected activity, that the protected activity was too remote in time to support the causal connection analysis of a reprisal claim.
On the retaliation question, did the court consider the plaintiff's complaint about Junior's conduct?
He didn't do so expressly. The court considered the Deb Petrie.
Is that a problem? Do we need to remand on that basis?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because he considered it in other contexts. Excuse me. So that therefore, it was clear that he considered all of the events. And if 2 years between the complaint about Ms. Petrie and the termination was too remote, 2009, the year before, 3 years would have been obviously even more so. So I do.
Complaints about Junior's conduct occurred in about 3 years before?
2009.
And termination was when?
12. I feel I have to turn and make sure I got my years right. I have sometimes, as I get older, start to lose track of the years. But I believe January 2012. Is that right? Thank you. Forgive me. to speak for a minute about the court's application of the McDonnell-Douglas test as it's evolved over the years. Plaintiff makes a number of arguments about the court making factual conclusions, which I'd just like to say that in the McDonnell-Douglas analysis, the defendant comes forward with a legitimate non-discriminatory reason, which the district court assumes is true. The plaintiff's primary attack on the defense legitimate non-discriminatory reason was, in fact, that it wasn't true. So the focus of that attacked the legitimate non-discriminatory reason. The court didn't make factual findings, contrary to what the plaintiff is arguing, about the legitimate non-discriminatory reason. It did, as it is required to do by years of precedent, assume that the defendant had a good faith basis for reaching that conclusion. And I think the distinction is obviously critical on appeal as well in terms of what the court concluded. So Judge Magnuson said in his decision, the defendant had a good faith basis to believe that there was a performance problem. From that, is there evidence to suggest that either that's an untrue reason or is there additional evidence to conclude that there is a basis, a pretext? In other words, is there more evidence than just that reason? I mean, traditional pretext would say, look at similarly situated people, et cetera, et cetera. The court, evaluating the whole record, concluded, and I would respectfully submit that this is very critical because it looks at all aspects of a classic legitimate non-discriminatory reason. The plaintiff must come forward with evidence that could persuade a reasonable jury that discrimination on the basis of her gender was a motivating factor. Looking at all the facts, the court concluded that the plaintiff had not. I'd like to just very briefly address the retaliation argument.
Real quick, on the credibility question, didn't the district court sort of downplay, maybe assign a lack of credibility to her own, quote, self-serving statements and those of her interested boyfriend?
Well, I think that, Your Honor, I think it appears that the case law is pretty clear that if all you've got to dispute the defendant's legitimate non-discriminatory reason is your own argument that it's wrong, there has to be something more. Now, let me just add to that to Mr. Anderson's. Right. So
there's a difference, though, between argument and testimony.
Right. But that was the testimony. The only testimony that there was anything suspect about the assessment of her performance came from somebody that the court said is, in fact, an interested person, and that is her boyfriend. Now, I think it's significant that that perhaps it's an overstatement to say that Mr. Anderson thought she was doing a great job on the cap or otherwise. What Mr. Anderson said was that she was, I believe, satisfactory or doing just fine, number one. And and secondly, that under this court's precedent, courts have held that just submitting a statement from a coworker that they're doing a good job isn't enough to overcome a good faith or the performance. And so in this case, the court just took those two things and put it together. Mr. Anderson wasn't plaintiff's supervisor. There was no reason to believe that there wasn't a good faith belief that her performance was not sufficient. And the facts or why he believed that are outlined in some detail in our brief. And Mr. Anderson, I think this is very important, this is in the appendix 563, he said, I don't think she was terminated because of her gender. I think she was terminated because she wasn't buddy-buddy with Walk. That's not evidence of discrimination. And at the end of the day, of improper sex discrimination, at the end of the day, that's what Judge Magnuson was saying. You might have had a tough boss. You might have had people be unkind to you. But where's the evidence of unlawful motive discrimination based on gender? As to the retaliation claim, the court assumed, as it is required to do, that all of the plaintiff's complaints were protected activity. 2009 complaint, 2010, early 2011 complaint, 2010 complaint, and 2011 complaint about Mr. Gabrielson, who wasn't her supervisor, that was dealt with. Those were 10 months at the absolute earliest before her termination. The court concluded that that was too remote in time under this court's years of precedent that even 2 months is too long a period of time. If McCrossin was devoted to terminating Ms. Lyles because of her protected activity, it would have done it a lot sooner. That was the logic, than waiting a number of years as the cases point out. In conclusion, I would respectfully request the court to affirm the district court's decision granting summary judgment to defendant C.S. McCrossin. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips. Mr. Antrim?
Thank you, Your Honor.
In response, when they had the whole situation with respect to the strange arrangement of not demoting her. There's a lot on the record with respect to that. They never told her that it was a problem. They took her to lunch and said, well, this is an opportunity. We're going to move you to the field. But she got telephone calls from other people saying, we heard you got fired. So it's a very strange arrangement indeed. Second, Manny Walk says her performance is satisfactory in July of 2011. And that's too early, but the next month he's asking for a cap form from HR? That's not right. Third, Your Honor, the time frame really is December 2009 to January of 2011, so it's closer to 2 years, much closer than 3 years. And another point that Judge Magnuson made was that the continuing violation was met, and yet he invoked the statute of limitations two or three times in his opinion. Inconsistent. With respect to Anderson and not giving his credence any credence at all, he never said it wasn't gender discrimination. He was never asked that. Your Honor, there's also comparator analysis available here with discrimination. Lyles was discriminated against by Walk with respect to a Nellis incident. Same thing they did. He was not disciplined. She was. Three men were told how to do career paths. She wasn't. But key, Your Honor, if I can finish with this, why did Manny Walk show up at the first review that Anderson ever got in 23 years? Why did Tom McCrossin quit taking her calls, going to the meetings? Something's funny going on here. Thank you, Your Honor.
Very good. Thank you, counsel. The case has been well argued and briefed, and we appreciate that. We'll consider it submitted and issue an opinion in due course.